This is a special report from ABC Radio News.
ABC Saigon calling ABC New York. Hello, New York. Hello, New York. This is ABC Saigon calling ABC New York.
Vietnam Update, the 37th weekly report on the U.S. fighting man in Vietnam. Everything is real. The voices, the situations, the actual combat. Vietnam Update, report number 37, the real story of war in Vietnam. While Don Gardner, your regular reporter on Vietnam Update, is on vacation, here is ABC's Art Van Horn.
The United States Marines have added a new name to their roster of battles, Operation Hastings, a smashing victory over communist guerrillas and North Vietnamese regulars in a patch of rugged mountains and jungle close to the 17th parallel, the border between South and North Vietnam. Lieutenant Daniel P. McCart of Newcastle, Pennsylvania, knows about Operation Hastings. It was his first battle in Vietnam.
Well, we was high mountains on all sides of us, and we got hit in a creek bed moving out.
How long was it before you got reinforcements in this position?
Oh, Aleppo Lima coming back. Must have been 30, 35 minutes, I'd say. We had air and artillery immediately on call. But we did get Lima Company, 30, 35 minutes. They ran all the way back from the front of the column, front of the battalion column.
Did you think it was possible that by the time you got reinforcements that your unit might be entirely wiped out?
No, because when the fire had opened up, most of these men knew what to do, hit the deck, and, in other words, cover each other, take what cover they could, and immediately went on a defense.
Marines like those under Lieutenant McCart found themselves at first under the guns of the communists, but once the battle was joined, the awesome power of American guns and planes came into play, backing up the Marines, who made Hastings a major victory for the Americans and their South Vietnamese allies in the Vietnam War. And when the battle-weary and blooded Marines came out of that jungle, ABC's Dave Snell talked to some of them, including Daniel Unks of Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and John Erickson of Brainerd, Minnesota. The first man Snell talked to was a Marine sergeant.
How many enemy do you estimate you're up against?
Hordes. They came in waves. I'd say 300-400.
Dan, what were you doing when this fighting took place, or what were you doing when it started?
Well, we were in a forward column when the rear was mortared, and we had to go back to cover for the people in the rear.
Yeah, how did you stop them?
Well, we seen them coming over a ridge. They had us trapped in sort of a gully. And we seen them coming over the ridge, and we shot them down as they come over. We managed to get up on top of the ridge and get cover from while we were in the gully. That way we shot them as they come towards the gully. They charged. And we drove them back that way.
Did you actually see a North Vietnamese soldier drop as a result of your firing?
Yes, I did. I seen several of them drop.
What does that experience feel like?
Well, when you see your buddies go down and it's caused by these people, you want to fight back and you feel that you have to do this. It may be wrong, but it's something you have to do. You have to stop this before your buddies are hurt.
What's your name? Where are you from?
John Erickson from Brainerd, Minnesota.
Now, you're a medic, is that right?
Yes, sir, hospital corpsman, Navy.
Had you ever been in a situation where so much was asked of you in such a little time?
No, sir. I didn't have much time to think. I just treated the ones that were brought in to me and that I saw and got them out of there, and that's about all I could do.
What do you think about when you're treating a fellow who may die if your treatment isn't good?
Well, I try not to think that my treatment isn't good. I just treat them the best I know how and get them out of there and go with the next man.
How many did you treat in the period of the afternoon?
I couldn't say. There were so many. I just treated them and got them out. I didn't know their names. Some of them weren't even from our company. We just treated them as we saw them, got them out.
The fighting in Operation Hastings lasted almost 3 weeks, and the American casualties are only now being reflected by the casualty figures given out in Saigon and Washington. Hastings casualties ran generally light, but some units suffered heavy losses. Here are the official casualty figures in all Vietnam fighting for last week, as listed by the Defense Department.
The number of American servicemen reported killed in Vietnam as a result of actions by hostile forces from July 16th to July 24th totals 136. The number of those reported captured or interned is 63. The current number of those reported missing is 225. The number of servicemen reported wounded is 578. The number of those reported to have died through ground action is 114. The number of those reported to have died through air action is 22.
Repeating those casualty figures, 136 Americans killed, 578 wounded, 14 missing. The Communists suffered heavy losses in Vietnam last week, due in large part to the Hastings fighting. 1,500 Communists are believed killed in Hastings. The Marine commander in Hastings was General Lowell English. And correspondent Dave Snell asked General English about the main purpose of Hastings.
First of all, I think that we have upset the North Vietnamese timetable. I believe that they had in mind to launch an offensive here sometime in September or October. By coming in when we did, I think we upset their plans, that we struck them before they were fully prepared, and as a result, it's going to make a great deal of difference in how they're going to conduct this campaign up here.
When do you think the end of the fighting here in Vietnam can be expected?
Well, that's a very difficult question to answer. I think that we are faced with a situation where we can probably look forward to a generation of American presence here. Whether we'll win the war in a year or 2 years is too problematical for me to say. But I think we all must remember that we've spent a generation in Europe, we spent a generation in Korea, and I see no reason why this place will be any different than those were.
General English and other commanders of Americans in Vietnam are aware of the quality of men under their command. They know what those men can do and will do, how far they will go and what they will endure. And they know how many of those men are killed or wounded or lost or captured. Officially, the armed forces say they do not list their men by race. But some say there is a disproportion between the number of Negroes in the armed services compared with the Negroes' population in relation to the civilians at home. The place of the Negro in Vietnam was under study last week by civil rights leader Whitney Young of the Urban League. Mr. Young, before he left Saigon for home, met newsmen in Saigon and reported on his Vietnam visit.
The purpose of the trip was to, first, to express our interest and concern and appreciation to the 45 to 60,000 Negro military personnel who were serving over here. We wanted them to know that Negro America was interested in their welfare, and we felt that some civil rights leader ought to come over and express their concern, and I'm pleased to have been the first to do this. In that connection, I might say that the visit was viewed by many with surprise, and I might say I hope immodestly, I hope modestly, with a great deal of gratification and pleasure on the part of the Negro military personnel, as well as many of the non-Negro military personnel. Secondly, we wanted to observe the much-reported, unprecedented interracial teamwork that has taken place in this encounter, and our experience confirmed. Certainly, we saw here a drastic improvement in terms of integration and race relations teamwork over any experienced in any other war. We did find a high degree of teamwork, and as expressed by many of the personnel, white and Negro, in their operations, the color of a man's skin was as irrelevant as it could possibly be, and that they found that heroes and cowards came in all colors.
Heroism and cowardice, like all things in war, are immensely personal matters. And this week in Vietnam, ABC newsmen found other instances where war had become an intensely personal thing to the Americans involved. That was Navy Lieutenant J.G. Dieter Dengler, a German-born flyer who came to America in 1957. The Defense Department revealed that it was Dengler who was rescued 23 days after escaping from a communist prison camp last week. And there was the very personal view of things by Captain James Mitchell of Ogden, Utah, who on Wednesday was supposed to fly his 99th mission and 100th, which was to be his last. Mitchell was shot down by the communists on the 99th. He was picked up in good shape, ready to fly number 100 as soon as the sun came up on Thursday. And there was Major William Leach of Victorville, California. He's had a personal view as you can get of Vietnam's war. Major Leach has flown 500 fighter missions on two tours in Vietnam, and when everyone gathered round to clap him on the back after number 500, ABC's Ray Maloney was there.
Everybody else wants to get out at the end of the first year. What keeps you here for two?
It was a very interesting job.
And tell me about it. What exactly is your job? What have you been doing here?
We're advisors to the Vietnamese Air Force, and our job is to assist them in any way possible to increase the efficiency and effectiveness of their operations. This involves seeing if they get the materials and the material and the training that's required to keep them developing as rapidly as they have in the past.
That in itself must have been a factor, because the Vietnamese Air Force has expanded fantastically over the last two or three years. Doesn't this create big problems in skilled personnel, and both in the air and on the ground and at the command level?
Obviously it does, but VNAF has risen to the challenge, and they're solving these problems as they occur and solving them better than could have been expected under the conditions.
Now, are there any particular missions that you remember over your 500 that either make you wake up in the middle of the night sweating or else make you roar with laughter? Something that sticks in the mind.
More of the latter category, I think, but there have been so many, really, they tend to blur together, and I remember the whole tour rather than any individual mission.
It's often said that a teacher learns as much as he teaches. When you go home from Vietnam, what is the thing that you will take back from here? What's the thing that you think you have learned out here?
Something of the Vietnamese, and one might almost say the Oriental, viewpoint on life, warfare, political systems, and other things of this nature. It's different from ours, in many ways more profound.
Now, I've got a question here I'm not sure if you'd want to answer, but you should have some views on it more than anybody else. The role of the advisor is a singularly difficult one, because nobody likes being given advice. With the number of people that we have in country now, the advisors and the fighting men, is there a danger at all that we will begin to get resentment from the Vietnamese, that they will begin to resent our presence here at all? Do you see any signs of anything like that?
Very little. Of course, I might put it this way. I believe that if the situation were reversed and Americans were being advised by Vietnamese, there would be a great deal more resentment on our side. The Vietnamese, with their 4,000-year history, are adept at social relationships to possibly a greater extent than we are.
Well, that's a pretty good answer. Can you tell me a little about today's mission now, what you were hitting and how it went?
We were hitting a VC staging area, which normally contains at least two battalions of VC, and from which ground fire usually issues continuously. The FAC had a strike four different areas with our bombs, and then we strafed three supply sampans and destroyed them. As usual, we couldn't see any ground fire, but we did destroy the structures and areas. He gave us, evidently he found one body from the air and gave us one killed.
Were you taking much ground fire?
We couldn't see it, and I don't believe there are any holes in the airplanes. We haven't checked them yet.
Well, I'm glad of that anyway. Major Leach, thank you very much, and my congratulations on the 500th.
Thank you.
Bill, congratulations.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, great to see you. Real fine milestone.
Yes, sir.
I told General Westmoreland last night, General Momar, that you were going to hit your 500th mission. He says, on one tour? I said, well, he's doing two. Pretty impressive. It's a real fine milestone. Congratulations, Bill.
Right at the end there, in that interview with Major Leach, you heard his CO, General Albert Schintz, getting in his congratulations to Major Leach for that 500th mission in Vietnam, the all-time Air Force record for Vietnam action in the air. But if flyers like Major Leach have a personal role in the air war, they sometimes find themselves with a front-row seat, being eyewitnesses as well as participants. The other day, one U.S. flyer saw communist missiles streaking toward his flight of F-105s over North Vietnam. The missiles missed, but instead of being destroyed in the air by their own ground controllers, at least one of those communist missiles fell back to earth, hitting the North Vietnamese village of Ha Gia. The American who saw it and tells about it was Air Force Major James Kassler of Indianapolis, Indiana, and a member of the 354th Tactical Fighter Squadron. Major Kassler tells about that missile that attacked its own country.
I was leading three flights in on two bridges about 14 miles north of Hanoi. We went in, had very good results on the bridges. I circled to the left off the target because I was getting some SAM activity, and as the second flight started their passes, I looked to the south, and the missiles were coming off the pad, off the launching pad, about 7 miles south of us. I was quite shocked, really, to see the missile impact in the middle of the city, why they allowed the thing to continue and the impact on the ground. I just can't imagine. I couldn't really tell if there was what the damage the missile caused, although I did see it hit in the center of some buildings. When these missiles go off, they have a very strange orange color explosion. I suppose it's something with the fuel contained in the missile or explosive, but it's an orange color. But I do know that it destroyed several buildings in the town itself.
Major Kassler is one of the flyingest Americans in Vietnam. The day after he saw that communist missile hit a North Vietnamese village, Kassler flew north again and helped knock out a railroad bridge northwest of Hanoi. Major Kassler is in the Daily Combat Reports often as he roams north looking for his own personal taste of the Vietnam War. But it's not all fighting. There are more hours spent on the ground or on an aircraft carrier than in the air. And that's when other things are important. On board the aircraft carrier Oriskany, ABC's Ray Maloney went below to talk to Howard Souders of Tucson, Arizona, a baker.
This is the best smelling place on the ship. I've got to say that before we go any further. And also, having just sampled one of the donuts, I'll go along with this place. How many donuts a day do you cook?
Bake.
Or whatever. What's the right term anyway?
We use terminology used for donuts is deep fat frying.
All right, that put me in my place.
We use a basic dough. We also make other forms of rolls from this. Now, usage, we bake off for over 3,000 people. Donuts is approximately 1,200 donuts a day. We support not only the general mess, which is the crew, but also the wardroom mess and CPO mess.
Mm-hmm.
These are two other messes on board the ship. We bake all the bread, pastry products for these areas.
How many loaves of bread do you turn out a day?
Approximately 600 per day. This is 1,200 pounds per day.
Don't you sometimes wish that they'd go on a diet that did not involve bread?
Well, no, I don't. My belief of diets is very nil. But
I'm not going to make any comment on that, but may I say that your figure speaks for yourself on that. You believe in eating your own goods, I take it.
Yes, I do. And that's why I was become a commissaryman. The law of a commissaryman is if you don't enjoy your own work, you don't do a very good job.
But it's not by bread alone that men are sustained in war.
Jolly Green, where are you going? Tell me why you play with hell. But if you ain't gonna listen, then may God speed and keep you well.
That's the voice of Airman Second Class Dave Stephson of Ossining, New York, who's written a song about his work. Airman Stephson is a pararescue technician, a highly trained expert in everything having to do with survival. He flies around in big helicopters to help rescue airmen who are down in hostile country. Those big whirlybirds have come to be called the Jolly Green Giants. Airman Stephson was in front of ABC microphones at Saigon's Tanzanut Air Base to talk about his job.
After a two-month pre-training program at Lackland Air Force Base, Texas, I was sent from there to Fort Benning, Georgia, where I was qualified as a parachutist. I was sent then to the Combat Survival School in Reno, Nevada, and I was qualified as a survival technician. I was sent to the United States Air Force School of Aerospace Medicine and qualified as a medic. I was then sent to the United States Underwater Swimmer School at Key West, Florida, and was qualified by the Navy there as a scuba diver. I was then sent to a transition school in Fort Walton Beach, Florida, at Eglin Air Force Base, where I not only trained as a crew member, but I was trained in arts such as tree climbing, parachute rigging, and I was sent to the Army Mountain Ranger Camp and was qualified by the Army Rangers as a mountain climber.
Airman Dave Stephson of Detachment 5 of the 38th Aerospace Rescue and Recovery Squadron. A brave man among brave men who risk their lives to rescue others. No wonder they're called the Jolly Green Giants.
You're running off to fetch another. Won't you jolly greens ever learn that each time you start your engines, someone mourns for your return? Jolly green, where are you going? Tell me why you play with hell. But if you ain't gonna listen, then may God speed and keep you well.
The war in Vietnam, a deeply personal experience reflected in the songs the men of Vietnam sing and the work they do and in the lives they give. 136 Americans lost last week. This is Art Van Horn, ABC Radio News, New York.
Vietnam Update, a weekly report on the United States fighting man in Vietnam. Everything is real. The voices, the situations, the actual combat. Vietnam Update, report number 37, the real story of war in Vietnam. ABC reporters in the field in Vietnam, David Snell and Ray Maloney. ABC field producers, Elliot Bernstein and Bob Lukman. Vietnam Update is written and produced by H. Paul Jeffers, directed by Bill Gately, executive producer Tom O'Brien, audio engineering by Dick Martinez and Ed Salzman. This is Fred Foy inviting you to keep up with developments in Vietnam with ABC Radio News every hour through the day, and on Vietnam Update each week, and with special reports as developments demand on this ABC Radio News station.